This episode of She Explores is brought to you by Subaru. Throughout this spring, we're checking in on some Subaru owners as well as test drivers of both the 2021 Subaru Outback Onyx and the Crosstrek Sport. We'll chat with artist and Subaru owner Anna Bronis later in the episode to hear about how her Forester transports her artwork and herself on adventures.
We're all about getting curious, giving back, and exploring on our own two feet. Which is why we love Jaunchy, a socially conscious running apparel company that's dedicated to giving back through running. Not only are their clothes designed to help you stay comfortable while you're hiking on the trail or setting off on a just-for-fun adventure run, 2% of all of Jaunchy's sales go to clean water projects around the globe. Water is a human right, yet 2.1 billion people lack access to it. So each season, Jaunchy both raises awareness for and gives back to a region that has restricted access to clean water. Keep your eye out this spring and summer. Their latest collection is inspired by Chennai, India. Jaunchy is sold at REI stores across the U.S. and online at jaunchy.com. Get 15% off your order by using the code SHEEXPLORES15 at checkout on jaunchy.com. That's JANJI.com, promo code SHEEXPLORES15. I'm Gail Straub, and you're listening to She Explores. So this is kind of a strange, maybe an odd question, but Mother's Day is coming up. How do you feel about the identifier or phrase dog mom?
I have mixed feelings about it because while I do feel like he is my child, I think motherhood is such a special thing. And I think more than being my child, he is my companion.
This is Kylie Yang, a dog owner, thru-hiker, and the New Jersey program coordinator for the New York New Jersey Trail Conference. It's worth noting that even though we talk about dogs a lot in this episode, so much of this conversation is about companionship, consideration, and care. So even if you're not a dog owner and you never plan to be, this episode touches on ways you can be a better hiking companion, whether your partner is a pet or a human. Or you're just thinking about other pets and humans on the trail. And if you are thinking about expanding your trail family with a dog, Kylie just might put you over the edge. She is incredibly passionate about sharing the trail with her pup and has lots of helpful tips thanks to years of experience. That said, neither she nor I are trained animal professionals. I've never even owned a dog. So we hope you'll treat this conversation as an opportunity to learn more. We'll start by learning about Kylie through her hiking companion, Sullivan.
He is a 10-year-old Vizsla. If you don't know what a Vizsla is, they kind of look like deers. He's all rust-colored, basically all legs. I think the best way to describe him would be he is totally like wise old man looking, but with puppy energy. I mean, he just never gets tired. He's really smart, but also kind of stubborn. He loves to do the thing where he hears you but acts like he's not listening to you.
Sounds like a pretty good hiking companion.
He really is. I mean, that boundless energy and is just like very outgoing, friendly personality. It was the perfect combination for him to do the AT with me.
You heard Kylie right. She hiked 1,800 miles of the AT with Sullivan, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. Do you remember the first time you took him on the trail?
I think the first time I took him on the trail was probably somewhere on the AT in Shenandoah. I lived in Richmond, Virginia for the last 12 years, and Shenandoah was just the easiest way to access the Appalachian Trail, and we loved going and day hiking there. And I definitely wanted to give him a solid try on trails there before I committed to anything else with him.
He did pretty well.
He did so well. And again, it was just that boundless energy where he was like, just so excited to be outdoors. And even now, every time I pick up my backpack, his face just lights up. His ears perk up and he just stands at attention just by the door staring at me, waiting for me to finish packing so we can go.
I can hear in your voice that the amount that he loves hiking makes you really happy too.
Absolutely. I mean, it is our absolute favorite thing to do together. And I can't imagine a better hiking companion.
Aw. It's obvious that Kylie and Sullivan both love hiking together, but let's get to know Kylie a little better by finding out when she first set foot on a trail, why she decided to become a thru-hiker, and how she decided to bring Sullivan along with her. Do you remember the first time that you stepped foot on a trail?
Oh, gosh. I was trying to think about that, and it must have been when I was maybe in middle school or elementary school. I grew up really close to a nature preserve, and I know they had a small trail system there, and I think probably the first time I stepped foot on a trail was at that local nature preserve.
Where was that?
It's called Sandy Bottom. I grew up in a town called Yorktown, Virginia, and it's very historic, a big Revolutionary War town, and there wasn't much to do other than be outside.
Do you remember when you stepped foot on a long trail?
Definitely the first time I stepped foot on a long trail was the Appalachian Trail. One of my friends had told me about this magical place, which is my favorite place to hike in Virginia, called Grayson Highlands. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but they have wild ponies running around there, and it literally just looks so unlike anything else you can find in Virginia. And I went on a couple night camping trip along the Appalachian Trail there, and I just totally fell in love.
Was it kind of wild looking at the trees and thinking about the fact that those blazes go all the way south to Georgia and all the way north to Maine?
100%. I mean, I first learned about the Appalachian Trail probably when I was in middle school. My local newspaper wrote an article about a woman who hiked the AT, who through hiked the AT and mailed herself packages along the way, which I guess was the best option at the time. This was back in late 1990s, early 2000s. And I was always kind of intrigued by that. And in my mind, I mean, I know I had heard she was mailing herself packages, but I kind of just thought like you would also forage along the way. Reading about that and then seeing the AT and like my mind just trying to wrap itself around how people could do such a thing. It was just a lot.
Yeah, I remember being a kid, and I don't remember the name of the book now, but there was this book where this boy carved a little home for himself out of a tree, and he just like lived in a tree for a while just on his own. And I remember wanting to be that self-sufficient, you know, as a kid, like wanting to have that kind of independence. So I can see where the trail could kind of also hold that level of mystique and like allure.
I totally relate to that. I mean, growing up, I was always the kid who wanted to go ride their bike around the neighborhood and just be free and feel that wind in my hair. And I think maybe that's part of why I've been so attracted to long distance trails, is that desire still in me.
When did you decide to through hike the AT?
I really started considering it seriously in spring of 2014. I was hiking McAfee Knob, which is also in Western Virginia on the Appalachian Trail, with one of my friends. And we were sitting on the knob and this group of through hikers rounded the corner. And I was like, where have you come from? Like, you look so scraggly. They were like, oh, we came from Georgia. And I was like, but you have beers in your hand. I'm confused. You look like you're having a great time. But I didn't think that beers were a thing that through hikers could have. And they were like, oh, well, we went into town, we stayed at this hostel last night, we ate at this restaurant in the morning, and then packed out beers to drink here. And I was like, huh, people stay in towns and hostels and can shower and wash their clothes occasionally? Once I heard that and learned about that, I started researching more and more and finally committed in fall of 2014. Mm. Is when I seriously started making life changes, getting ready to leave.
Yeah, and you have to make a lot of life changes to do it.
Oh, so many.
But one life change you didn't make was that you didn't leave your dog behind.
I did not. Well, technically, I started without him because dogs aren't allowed in the Great Smoky Mountains. And I knew boarding him was not a thing I wanted to do. And I did want to hike through the Smokies. So he stayed at home with my parents for a few weeks and then came to meet me literally right outside of the Smokies.
So how did he take to the AT?
He did so well. I mean, the one thing I did with him a lot was run and just made sure we were both on our feet a lot beforehand, just so he was kind of conditioned for walking really, really long days. But he hopped right in and it felt so natural. And I mean, even sleeping in a tent with him felt so easy. He and I shared a sleeping bag and he had a little jacket and a little bed. He just did so well. And everyone I was hiking around just loved him and loved being around him as well.
I'm also guessing that his spindly legs are good on rocks, like for some of the craggier parts.
He is literally like a mountain goat. I mean, he just traversed things with such ease, and I struggled so much. Watching him is admirable.
When you look up the Vizsla dog breed, their characteristics do seem suited to long-distance hiking. They need at least 60 minutes of exercise each day. They rarely need baths. They enjoy long walks and thrive with human companionship. Every dog is different, so Kylie emphasizes really knowing your dog before taking on an adventure like this, and paying attention to them along the way. All to say, I asked Kylie a lot of rapid-fire questions about thru hiking with Sullivan. And while her advice is spot on, it's spot on for Sullivan. If you're thinking about thru hiking with your dog, keep them in mind while you're listening. So I feel like I have so many questions about thru hiking with a dog, and even just hiking with a dog. But thru hiking, I feel like if you haven't done it, which I have not, when you read about the prep and, you know, so much of the talk is about minimizing weight, you know, and making things kind of easier on yourself. Not knowing intuitively, I feel like your pack is heavier with a dog and things are a little more complicated.
Absolutely. Logistically, there are so many more factors that you need to take into consideration when you're hiking with a dog, just because, you know, you can plan on how much food you're going to carry until the next town. You can plan out how much water you're going to carry or not carry in the case of most thru hikers. But I always wanted to make sure he was provided for, so that just like planning ahead was just another level.
So how do you plan ahead for like the amount of food that you need for a dog?
That was a thing that I was honestly so caught off guard by. I mean, I know I got hiker hunger, but he got hiker hunger next level. At home, I feed him really just protein, dense, rich food. And so I feed him like 3 cups a day. And I started out feeding him 4 cups a day and just slowly increased from there. And I mean, towards the end of my thru hike, when we were in Maine, he was probably eating 6 to 8 cups a day and still looked like he was lean and muscular. But one thing that I had heard ahead of time that I tried to take into consideration was that they just need more fat. I mean, just like thru hikers. And so I would feed him a mix of adult food and puppy food, just because puppy food is higher in fat. So he was hopefully getting all the nutrients that he needed.
Did he get treats in trail towns too? You know, I'm guessing you had certain foods that you lean towards. Did he get certain food or certain treats?
He literally, people would just come up to me and ask if they could give him things. It was a nonstop supply of treats. Basically anytime we saw a person or stayed with a person in town or were at a restaurant and people saw that my dog was outside and I was going back outside to eat with him, they would just be like, we have these fries or we have this little extra burger meat. Can we give it to your dog?
And he probably happily ate that.
Totally. And it totally spoiled him. And now whenever he sees people coming at us hiking, it's just like ears up. What do you have to give me? Are you going to pet me?
Where'd you store all the food in your pack? Like, how'd you make room for that?
So he carried a pack. He carried a 14.5-liter pack. And I'd read that dogs can carry up to 25% of their body weight, but I never wanted him to do that. So he would carry a couple bags of his food, and then he carried a bowl and a little jacket for himself as well. But for the most part, the rest of his food was just going on the top of my pack.
Gotcha. It's good to have it handy.
It is, but the smell that came out of my backpack, in addition to like nasty thru hiker smell, there was dog food mixed in with it. It was just like,
Did he get a trail name? I know people get trail names.
He did. His trail name is Booze Hound because he is obsessed with beer. My trail friends and I would be sitting holding beers in town or just wherever, and he would do this sneaky, sneaky thing where he would come up and put his head on your shoulder and act like he just wanted attention. But then he would slowly, slowly wrap his head around your neck and just start drinking out of your beer that's in your other hand.
Oh, that's really funny. When we talk about all the food, you know, all that food has to go somewhere ultimately.
Yes.
How do you manage the waste?
So the thing I would always do if I could is pack it out. And that's another reason why my pack in my current packs now just smell so horrible. I would always just put it in my front pocket if I knew I was going to be in a town within a day or two. But otherwise, I would just bury it, just dig a cat hole like you would for a human. I just got so comfortable handling dog waste because Sullivan would oftentimes just step right off the trail just onto the side and poop wherever. And, you know, getting that to a place where it was okay to bury it, it just required a lot of accidental poop touching.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
A thing I never thought I would say in my life, but here I am.
Yeah. In bad weather, especially if the dog is wet, how do you keep your gear dry in that instance?
It's literally impossible. I mean, I had changes of clothes and I carried a full-size pack towel, just a microfiber towel, so I could always wipe him off at the end of the day and whenever we stopped, just to make sure he was as dry as he could be. And he had a jacket with him. At least he didn't have long hair. That was the one thing. But the shaking off in the tent is just inevitable. And especially sharing a sleeping bag and sharing a pretty small tent with him, there's just basically nothing you can do. You just accept it.
Everyone who I've talked to who through hikes, there's always some extra thing that someone brings along that's like a luxury or it's just like so important to them that they need to have it. I want to say the famous objects that Cheryl Strayed brought along were books, you know, like heavy books, like not practical at all, but it's worth it to that person. And it sounds like that's the case for you and Sullivan.
100%. Every extra pound of food that I carried for him, and I mean, even now, I'm always carrying a 2-liter pouch of water for him just in case. That extra weight is just always worth it to have him with me.
That first long through hike that Kylie and Sullivan did on the AT was 6 years ago. As 2020 neared, they began planning for the Pacific Crest Trail. But when the COVID-19 pandemic hit, plans changed. Kylie got a new job, relocated, and then ended up planning a different sort of long hike, which we'll hear about after the break. We're all about getting curious, giving back, and exploring on our own 2 feet, which is why we love Jonji, a socially conscious running apparel company that's dedicated to giving back through running. As you heard at the top of the episode, Jonji contributes 2% of all their sales to help fund clean water projects around the world. A commitment to work towards clean water for all is built into the Jonji company promise, as is making cute, functional, and comfortable apparel for all kinds of movement. Take the all-new AFO Vent Multi-Short. It's made for extended periods on your feet, whether it's trail running, hiking, fast packing, you name it. If you're like me, you'll appreciate the 5 waistband pockets that are built in to keep your valuables secure and bounce-free. Lightweight yet tough, the AFO Vent Multi-Short is made from a durable 4-way stretch nylon fabric that's abrasion resistant, retains its shape, wicks moisture, and dries quickly. I think my favorite quality is that they resist taking on odors, perfect for a multi-day backpacking trip, or just for saving the water that it takes to wash them. Jonji is sold at REI stores across the US and online at jonji.com. Get 15% off your order by using the code SHEEXPLORES15 at checkout on jonji.com. That's JANJI.com, promo code SHEEXPLORES15.
I have a Subaru Forester. It's blue, so we call it Blue Baru.
Anna Bronas is a proud Subaru owner of a well-loved Forester. As an artist in the Pacific Northwest and lover of the outdoors, her Subaru has helped get both her body and art on the move.
A couple weekends ago, we drove up and we're on the Hood Canal and found some local swimming spots, which was kind of fun. I made some coffee outside. And then just last weekend, I actually, in a funny sort of full circle thing, I had worked on a big art project called Women's Wisdom Project that was 100 different portraits of women that had a show last March. And I didn't know what was going to happen with those pieces, but I just actually took them up to a cafe on Bainbridge Island the other day for a new show for Women's History Month, and it was kind of fun because I like packed them in the car and I was like, oh, look, we're doing this again.
Discover the 2021 Subaru Outback Onix and the all-new, more powerful 2021 Subaru Crosstrek Sport by heading to Subaru.com and find the perfect vehicle you'll love for years to come.
We're back. While Kylie's thru-hike of the Appalachian Trail was quite a few years ago, she stayed connected to the trails in her personal and work life. One way she stayed connected to long trails was by ridge running for a couple of seasons. What is a ridge runner?
So ridge runners are like hiking, camping trail stewards. They hike from place to place and teach people about leave no trace and kind of help foster that positive relationship between the community and the Appalachian Trail. The program is run through the Appalachian Trail Conservancy, and ridge runners are kind of broken up either by state or by a specific area that they're assigned to cover. And I was working in New Jersey on the Appalachian Trail.
Very cool. Was it 6 full years between long hikes for you then?
Yes. Oh my gosh. I can't believe it's been that long, but I keep getting notifications of memories from 6 years ago. But I mean, in between that time, I was ridge running on the Appalachian Trail. So I did spend 2 total summers outdoors and hiking. But yeah, it's been 6 years. I never planned to go this long in between hikes, but...
Well, I mean, it's a huge time investment. It's a financial investment. I mean, it's a lot to take on a long trail.
It really is, yeah. Over the summer, I guess even before that, I'd been planning to thru-hike the PCT in 2020. And then when the pandemic came, obviously, PCTA guidance was don't hike. And I wanted to honor that. And I never wanted to put anyone else in danger just so I could hike. So I decided to postpone.
With her Pacific Crest Trail hike postponed, Kylie was suddenly in the market for work again. She found a job with the New York, New Jersey Trail Conference and moved north.
I am a program coordinator for the state of New Jersey. It's really multifaceted, but the best way to describe it is I provide support for volunteer-led trail projects and kind of serve as a liaison between volunteers and park partners and shoulder a lot of the administrative load so that our volunteers can perform the more enjoyable elements of working on the ground.
But Kylie was looking for more ways to spend time outside than just through work.
When I accepted my job for the New York, New Jersey Trail Conference, I was kind of looking around, wanting to hike in the area more and just get to know my new home state better. And the long path came up and I was like, you know, this is intriguing. It's a trail that not a lot of people do. And it's so diverse and really, really accessible. I mean, I didn't camp at all. I was doing everything as section hikes just because I didn't have a sleeping bag that I felt was warm enough to get me through winter nights.
How long is the trail?
The trail is 357 miles. It runs from the George Washington Bridge in Manhattan to John Boyd Thatcher State Park, which is just outside of Albany.
Oh, wow. It starts at the GW Bridge.
I literally got dropped off at a subway station and had to walk across the bridge. Yeah, it's a really unique start. And that's why I say the trail is just so diverse because, I mean, where else are you starting in the city?
Kylie kicked off her section hike of the long path in mid-October. Sullivan joined her on the other side of the bridge. If you've driven across it, you know that it would be pretty overwhelming for a dog. For day hiking with Sullivan, Kylie recommends a harness, 6-foot leash, 2-liter water pouch, a bowl for food and or water, first aid, wag bags, and extra food. A jacket was also important for him in the cold weather that autumn and winter brought along the trail. So what were some of the challenges hiking that path in winter?
I am from Virginia, and being from Virginia, I have not experienced snow like we have gotten in New York this year. And just learning how to hike, really hike in the winter for long periods of time was such a huge learning curve for me. I don't think I've ever hiked in more than like 3 or 4 inches of snow. So figuring out footwear and layering and, you know, when you need snowshoes and when you need micro spikes, which micro spikes were a thing I'd never really even heard of until I started doing PCT research. All of that was just such a huge learning experience for me. Just because the trail was so close to my house, I would come home at the end of every night. But I camped a few times in a few places. I mean, Sullivan is like a furnace to have in my tent. So that was always so, so helpful. And he loves sharing my quilt with me. So I would just wrap both of us up and that definitely helps. But yeah, I mean, I just felt like I couldn't comfortably carry the amount of layers I needed and just didn't have the right sleeping bag for sleeping outside in the winter.
Another unexpected element of fall and winter hiking that Kylie navigated was hunting season. She shared in a follow-up email with me after the interview that it was a big learning experience for her and a big reason that she didn't camp on the long path. Between her camo tent and an adorable dog that looks a whole lot like a deer, it just didn't feel worth it. It was all a bit more complex than she'd initially thought. Kylie spent a lot of time learning about different regulations and dates depending on which land she was on. She had to remember to wear Blaze Orange and to make sure that Sullivan had Blaze Orange on as well. Kylie emphasized that whether or not you own a dog, it's hugely important to do your research and be prepared during hunting season. Okay, back to our conversation. I imagine there were a lot fewer people than the AT. The community's got to be a lot different.
Oh, yeah. I would say there are still a few trail angels, and you do go through more heavily trafficked trails. The trail goes through the Catskills, and I definitely saw a lot of people there. But I would say north of the Catskills, I maybe saw 5 people from north of the Catskills to the end, which is 150 miles, give or take.
Wow. Mm-hmm. What was like a typical day like being solitary like that?
I did have Sullivan with me for a lot of my hike. And so that was just like really great company. And I feel like I'm just endlessly amused watching him, and he occupies so much of my time. But I do tend to listen to a lot of podcasts while I'm hiking. So it's just kind of like my catch up time. And aside from that, I really just kind of use it as almost a meditative space when I'm hiking to just, you know, not think about anything else and just focus on hiking and just being happy in nature.
From talking to Kylie about Sullivan, it seemed that she was very attuned to Sullivan's needs. I asked her how she gauged his hiking ability on the long path, since they were both hiking in a new snowy environment, and whether he needed to push himself at any point.
So for me, it's always been, you know, if he wants to stop, we're stopping. And if it's raining and he looks miserable, we won't hike or won't continue to hike. And just knowing those limitations was so, so important for me, especially now that he's getting older. I could tell when his hips are kind of hurting. And that's always been such a huge indicator for me that, you know, we just need to call it off. And I think for me, that's been such a huge learning experience and a huge exercise and being flexible just to adapt to his needs, because I never want to push him to a point where he's injured or where he's unhappy. And I want to continue to have that positive relationship of hiking with him.
How did it feel when you finished the long path?
I don't want to say that the finishing sign for the long path is a little underwhelming, but it's a little underwhelming. It's literally in a parking lot and it's nailed to a tree in a direction which doesn't necessarily face the way that you're coming, depending on how you're looking. But I think just because I did finish in the winter, it snowed the day I finished. Mm. That did feel really incredible and really special. And I mean, I think doing it in a pandemic year in a way that I felt like was the safest way that I could do it was really great.
Your career is centered around trails. Did you end up gaining a new insight into the trails in New York State?
100%. I mean, I learned just so much about so many areas I think I never would have gone to otherwise, and trails that are, in my opinion, really underutilized kind of in between Albany and north of the Catskills. And I'm always looking for ways to lessen my impact. And that felt so good to not be on trails that everyone else was flocking to. But yeah, and that, and I learned so much about, because the New York New Jersey Trail Conference, the organization I work for, maintains the long path trails. I've just learned so much about advocacy and, you know, what we're doing to acquire land to protect the trail and things like that.
So as you look ahead to summer, are you excited about some dry, warm weather hiking?
Oh my gosh, I am so excited for summer. Just The amount of clothes I will not have to carry with me is such a great motivation for getting outdoors. I can't wait, especially because hiking in Virginia hiking on the East Coast is a little oppressive in terms of humidity, but I think hopefully New York summer will be a little bit cooler than Virginia summer. And I just can't wait to see everything with foliage on trees.
Yeah, it is really fun. I live in New Hampshire, and just the way the seasons transform just this tiny little state, you never can be bored in that way.
Exactly. I mean, there are so many things I love about winter hiking, one of which is just being able to see so much more, but I also love a really lush green trail.
Do you have any plans for another long hike in the future?
One of my life goals is to triple crown, so I'm definitely still looking forward to hiking the PCT or CDT whenever the time comes. But I mean, this summer, I'm really hoping to hike the Northville Lake Placid Trail. It's 137 miles. It's pretty gentle in terms of elevation gain and loss, and I think Sullivan could definitely do it with me.
Yeah. Okay. 137 miles. What would you budget for a trip like that, time-wise?
I think that just because I do have Sullivan with me and I want to take it a little slower for him, I think if I were doing it myself, I'd probably try to do it in a week, maybe a little longer. But with him, I would say in the 10 to 12 day range.
Cool. I'm not asking for myself. If you look back after having hiked 1,800 miles of the AT with Sullivan, having section hiked a lot of the long path with Sullivan, can you imagine your hiking experience without him?
No. I mean, and that was the thing I struggled with when I was thinking about the PCT. I was never planning on having him in the desert because I just didn't think that would be fair to him, nor do I think it would be good for him. But I don't want to say I've come to rely on him, but his companionship is just so important to me. I mean, especially at a time where, you know, I'm Asian American, and after all of the violence against the AAPI community over the last year, just having him with me, he's been a huge security blanket. And in places where I might not have felt welcome otherwise, I feel a lot more at ease just because he's there.
It sucks, but it's beautiful.
It's such a double-edged sword because I'm so grateful for him. But yeah, I wish that was something I and other people just never had to think about.
This is one of those moments where I wish I'd had more words in the moment. But I want to say quickly that while I'm so glad that Kylie has Sullivan, dogs are incredible protectors. We all need to speak out against the unacceptable rise of Asian American and Pacific Islander hate crimes. I've linked a few resources in the show notes. Kylie went on to share her thoughts on Leave No Trace and hiking with a dog.
Through hiking with a dog was such a huge learning experience. And I think, you know, practicing Leave No Trace principles with a dog is a huge learning experience well. And I always tell people, you know, strive for growth, not perfection. Don't put too much pressure on yourself. We're not perfect. I've certainly not been perfect, but that willingness to learn and grow is crucial.
Yeah, could you speak a little bit more to that? Like, what are some of those challenges of practicing Leave No Trace with a dog?
I think definitely dealing with waste, and then hiking with your dog on a leash. As a through hiker, I certainly did not have him on a leash at all times just because I feel like I trusted him so much. But consideration is huge for me. And so anytime we were around people, he would be on a leash. And, you know, I think that so many people are getting outdoors, and I always want to make sure that everyone is having a good experience. And so while your dog may be friendly and, you know, he may be good with other dogs, that doesn't necessarily mean another dog is good with other dogs and that people are okay with your dog running up to them. So I think just keeping that in mind when you're hiking is so important.
Yeah. A lot of Leave No Trace is being considerate, you know, and so is making the choice to hike with a dog.
Totally.
And that's just something that on the whole, we could all be better at when we're hiking.
I agree. And again, I'm not perfect, but I'm trying.
This is a recurring theme here on She Explores, continually learning, having conversations, passing that knowledge forward, and calling folks in.
Yeah, and that was one thing with ridge running and teaching people about Leave No Trace, too. It's never productive to scold someone. It's always more important to explain why something will impact someone in a different way or the environment in a different way and a way that they might not have thought of. And I feel like, yeah, that is so much of the hiking community, you know, that positive teaching and learning experience over the gatekeeping and just shutting people out. Hmm.
I asked Kylie if she had any final words of advice for hiking with a dog.
I think just be patient and, you know, if you're thinking about hiking with your dog, really, really get to know them. Take them in all different kinds of situations, see how they react, and then plan your hike based on that. Don't ever push your dog outside of its limitations and comfort zone. I think that's so important.
I love that because... And I'm going to have to like have this blanket disclaimer for this episode that I'm not a dog owner and I've never owned a dog. So I'm sure what I'm about to say is not accurate at all. But as an outsider to that type of intimate relationship and intimate companionship, there can be, I assume, sometimes this level of like projecting that if the human feels really comfortable, they might project that the dog does too if they aren't actively listening like you're recommending. So it feels really important.
Totally. And I mean, thru hiking is the best experience I've ever had with Sullivan. It bonded us in a way that I don't think we ever could have bonded before. And I feel like we have such a great understanding of one another because of it. But yeah, being willing to listen is so key.
Thank you to Kylie Yang for taking the time to talk. Follow along on her Instagram, @KylieYang. Thank you to Subaru and John G for supporting this episode. You can find She Explores on social media, our website, and wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find me on Instagram, @GailStraub. If you enjoy listening, there are a few different ways to support us. You can subscribe, leave a review, and share with a friend. And if you'd like to connect, join us in the She Explores podcast Facebook group. Music in this episode is licensed through MusicBed. This episode was edited by Julie Hotz and produced by me, Gail Straub. She Explores is a production of Ravel Media released on Wednesdays. Until next week, stay curious.